Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
Holy crap, it's Nerd Pride Radio.
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
It's a place for all the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
Look, by definition, if I'm interested in it, then it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
I'm in love with a nerd.
Welcome to episode one of Nerd Pride Radio. Why number one? Because it's the first counting number. Of course, it's also the second and third Fibonacci numbers, but that is no way to number a podcast. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome. Today is a great day. My name is Mike, and my co-host this week is my own gigantic ego, so hopefully the two of us can share a mic without fighting. Since this is the first episode, you would think that I have no viewer mail yet, and yet that is not technically true. On the Nerd Pride Radio forums, I started a thread about having to do a podcast, and I got from Mime Killer, of all people, not that you know Mime Killer, but I do. Mime Killer says, I'm looking forward to it. I hope WrestleMania is the first topic. This is followed up from a comment by Ginger One, who says, yeah, I like that idea. So, just for you guys, let's talk about WrestleMania. Mime Killer's suggestion was that I watch the pay-per-view and give a commentary. That ain't going to happen, but I will give you my one pro wrestling experience. Somewhere around, I don't even know anymore, 15, 16 years ago, I was a social worker. I worked with adult mentally handicapped individuals, and at some point, someone organized a trip to, I think this was back when it was still WWF. And so we all drove an hour and a half to watch pro wrestling live. All right, and so it was me and a couple of professional staff members, and then about 8, 9, 10 of our clients, and we were just acting as chaperones. And I'm not a big fan of wrestling. I've never paid much attention. All I know is it's fake. All right, and so we got out there, and I barely knew any of the guys' names. I think this was when The Undertaker was big. Was Goldust there? I don't remember. Anyway, it doesn't make any difference. What's important about this story is that one of the guys with us was in a wheelchair. You know what that means? That means we got the handicap seating. We got front row. I am not kidding. We were sitting ringside at a pro wrestling match. And it was glorious. You have never... Here's the thing about watching pro wrestling live. I don't know if you've ever been there, and I certainly don't know if you've been close enough to feel the sweat fly off into the audience, but it looks even more fake in person than it does on TV. All right? I mean, it's clearly... I mean, you're sitting right there. All right? The guys are not but feet from you, and oh, it's clear that that fist got nowhere near the dude. And guess what? Nobody cared. It was awesome. The show was spectacular. The drama was there. And this was, you know, we were watching it at a little town. So, you know, it wasn't televised. So we knew that, yeah, even though they're making a big deal about, you know, who's fighting for what glory and who, we knew that nothing was going to change because you don't actually hand over titles or have big upsets and turnovers. You don't have those unless it's televised. So we knew this was going to be a pretty ordinary show. It didn't matter. It didn't matter. We had a great time. We were watching guys flying off the ropes, and they were putting their all into it. I just had to explain to my son the other day that I know wrestling's fake, but that doesn't mean these guys aren't athletes. I mean, holy crap, the things these guys do. And you know they got to hurt the next day, all right? But it was awesome. But the best part of this show, and I've told this story a million times, so if you've heard it before, forgive me. But the best part of this show was one of my clients, his name was Tom. Tom was just the nicest, sweetest, quietest guy. He was always, I mean, he was funny. He was a big Elvis fan. He was a big wrestling fan. And he always had a real subtle humor to him. But just a nice, accommodating guy. He would just never say a cross word about anybody. He was just a good guy. And we're watching pro wrestling, and I'm sitting right next to Tom, and in the middle of one of the matches, Tom, gentle, sweet, wonderful little Tom, stands up and starts screaming at the wrestlers, "Grab the chair! Hit him with the chair!" Oh, that was probably the best part of the whole night for me. I had such a great time. And I have never been back. That's the only time I've ever gone. I've never bothered to watch wrestling on TV. My only experience with wrestling on TV was when I was younger, and they would often preempt Saturday Night Live for pro wrestling, which just annoyed the crap out of me. But even though I've never been before or since, that one time was a wonderful experience. If you've got a chance to go see wrestling, especially in a smaller venue where you can get the tickets fairly cheap, I have no idea what tickets are anymore. For all I know, they're $200. I have no clue. But if you get a chance to go see it, do it at least once. It was just a ton of fun. And of course, I also say the same thing about arena football. If you got a chance to go see arena football, you know, even just once, man, that is a show spectacular. It is worth your time. But anyway, there you go, guys. There's your WrestleMania topic, or as close to it as I can get. But let's get on to the main topic. This week, our main topic is nerd pride. I mean, after all, it's a topic that is so important to me personally that I named my podcast for it. In fact, I named my entire website for it, nerdprideradio.com. Go see it now. I am dedicating an entire online presence to the whole concept of nerd pride. So I figured episode one would be a good time to talk about it. First off, my nerd cred, just to know where I'm coming from. If you're questioning my nerdity, my nerdosity, I have been a dungeon master for 30 years now. Yeah, exactly. You beat that. I was introduced to D&D back in 1981, and ever since then, I have been the dungeon master. I've played tons of games, you know, from D&D through, oh goodness, we played Champions and other superhero games. We played Paranoia. We played the 007 James Bond role-playing game. We played up through, you know, Shadowrun and more recent stuff. And even stuff that we've designed ourselves, because eventually y'all get to that point. And I love role-playing games. I can't tell you how much I enjoy role-playing games. I love playing them. I love writing them. I've even published some games. I've published one game, all right, that was legitimately published by an outside publisher, and that game was Pariah, based on the Fudge system. So if you're a role-playing gamer, you realize that even role-playing nerds look at Fudge and go, yeah, that's nerdy. Yeah, so Pariah was my first published game. And then after that, my brother and I built our own website and wrote our own games and published them. And I'm actually making all of those available on Nerd Pride Radio, so you guys will see them. It's all our games are free. But there's some really good stuff in there. I love my role-playing. Back to my credentials. I am an assistant scoutmaster. Does that count? I mean, it's kind of a... This one was questionable for me as to whether or not being a Boy Scout counts towards my nerd cred, because I know a lot of Boy Scouts, and at least in our area, they're not all nerds. But I do know that the Boy Scouts of America have that reputation as kind of nerdy. So I'm throwing it in there, but I'm letting you know it's not all like that. But hey, what would I know? I'm a nerd. But you want to take my Boy Scout experience and tie it back to my role-playing games? I've actually written a game called Terror at Camp Pinewood. And we actually got to play it once. And it is a role-playing game based on being Boy Scouts and being at a camp where basically you're in a Boy Scout horror movie, and the Boy Scouts get to be the heroes. And spectacular game. Like I say, played it once, and I'm hoping to get it all finished up in a final form so everyone can see it, but we'll get to that later. More about me. I read books about math for fun. Uh, I I love math. I could go on and on and on. I do, again, role-playing games. I do statistical analysis of dice. You want to see my spreadsheets? I got a lot of them. More nerd stuff. My dogs are named Sam and Pippin. And if you get that, then you are also a nerd. I am Nick Burns, your company's computer guy. It is what I do for a living. I install, repair, train, anything having to do with computers in the facility I work with, it comes through me. So I am a computer nerd. Let's see, RPG nerd, math nerd, computer nerd. I guess almost goes without saying, I am a sci-fi nerd. Star Wars, Star Trek, all things sci-fi, I dig it. Doctor Who, comedy nerd. God, I love comedy, especially stand-up comedy, but all comedy. When I was 10 years old, I memorized two of Bill Cosby's albums, and then I would go around regaling my friends with verbatim recitals of these Bill Cosby bits, and spectacular stuff. Then when I was a little older, it was George Carlin at Carnegie, Carlin on campus. I could recite both of those backwards and forwards. Past that, Eddie Murphy Raw. I mean, you know, you look back at Eddie Murphy and his stand-up is really, really dated, really racist, really misogynist, homophobic. It does not hold up well, but at the time, Eddie Murphy was the bomb. And can I say bomb? Is that outdated? All right. And Eddie Murphy Raw, I had that one memorized. Sam Kinison's first TV appearance on some HBO Rodney Dangerfield special. Yep, I had that one down. I just love comedy in general. Even nowadays, I listen to, if you're interested in comedy yourself, the Marc Maron WTF podcast is spectacular for listening to behind-the-scenes stuff, interviews with comedians, stuff like that. It is an R-rated sort of podcast. It's really rough, but Marc Maron is the best at what he does. Spectacular stuff. More about my comedy nerdity, Saturday Night Live. I've always loved the show Saturday Night Live. I haven't watched it in a few years. I kind of fell away a few years ago. Just don't have the time. I am getting old, and I can't stay up that late on the weekends. But I've just always got a soft spot in my heart for SNL. In fact, I even have a spreadsheet that charts all the performers that have ever been on SNL as featured players or as regular not ready for time primetime players. What years they were in, how long they stayed, blah, blah, blah. I have a whole spreadsheet of that. The last time I updated was, like I say, I haven't been following Saturday Night Live lately. But last time I updated it, I think it was up to like 110 cast members from the 30 years of the show. So, yeah, nerd. I'm a bit of a movie nerd. I have yet another spreadsheet maintaining a list of all of the most badass movie quotes of all time. I absolutely love movies. I love picking up quotes from them. I collect them. So if you've got good, badass movie quotes, send them to me. I have been a comic book nerd and really just a superhero nerd in general. I love supers. And as the movies come out, man, I eat them up. Finally, with Spider-Man, X-Men, all the Marvel properties the last few years, last decade, they've really figured out how to do comic book movies correctly, and I'm really enjoying them. So I loved Iron Man. I loved the new Hulk. Obviously, I am peeing in my pants waiting for Thor and Captain America and the Avengers movie. It's just too much. Oh, my God. Beyond that, obviously, everyone loves The Dark Knight and Kick-Ass and 300 and Scott Pilgrim. Oh, my gosh. So I just moved away from superheroes, but comic books in general and comic book properties. Cool stuff. I collected, my brother and I together collected comics when we were in junior high and high school, and a little bit into college, and massive collection of comics. Still have them up in the closet upstairs. I own the original Dark Knight miniseries, and I am very proud of that one. I own tons of X-Men comics, Spider-Man comics. We were mostly Marvel. We've got some Teen Titans. We've got some DC stuff, some independent stuff. But for the most part, it was Marvel. A huge collection. And finally, it just got too time-consuming and too expensive. And I still will wistfully walk past comic book shops. I will go in and browse through the comics briefly. I will look and see, just get a vague idea of what's happening nowadays. And oh God, I wish I had the time and money to devote to that again, because I love comic books, but I just can't keep up. There's no way. So I was a comic book nerd. Now I'm a wannabe comic book nerd. I'm also a wannabe music nerd. Man, I don't qualify as a music nerd in any way. I really don't. But I am so jealous of people who do qualify as that. I don't care if it's band nerd, choir nerd, indie rock nerd, classical music nerd. I don't care. I just wish I knew more about music. I would love to be more into that. And I have a lot of friends who are. But, man, does it make me even more nerdy to wish I could be a music nerd? But fortunately, I am raising my kids right. Because they are. My kids, I mean, you know, like I say, I was never in band in high school. I didn't get into the music, the speech, the drama, but my kids do all of that, and they excel at it. I mean, I so wish I'd been more involved in that stuff when I had the chance, but oh well. You know what? There's the chance for the next generation. Well, wait, hold on. There's one area of music. One area that I really geek out on is cover songs. Love cover songs. Holy cow. Maybe I'll make a whole topic out of this sometime. There's just so much. But if you thought you recognized the opening music, yeah, that was Sabotage. It was originally by the Beastie Boys, but the version you just heard was actually a French disco version by a group called the Penelopes. And I love the original. I love the Beastie Boys in general. But I love this cover version just as well. It is so sweet. Because the singer sings Sabotage in a French accent, and it's clear that he is not, or it seems that he's not a proficient English speaker, because there's the one part in the chorus where the word mirage comes up, and two times he pronounces it correctly, but one time he's clearly reading it and he pronounces it mirag. And so it's clear he doesn't know what he's saying, but the sound is great. Love that song. So like I say, cover songs, we'll get more of those some other time. But enough about my certifieds. Seriously. Where does the pride come in? We've got the nerd clearly, so what about the pride? Me personally, I actually didn't have any nerd pride growing up. Or at least not much. Because it just wasn't a possibility. I mean, the concept in the 70s and 80s, the concept of nerd pride really did not exist. We had the movie Revenge of the Nerds, which you'll notice several of the quotes were pulled from my opening. But even Revenge of the Nerds, I mean, really, the nerds themselves were nothing but horrific stereotypes. And that movie has so many other flaws that we could go into. I mean, that was not a case for nerds as exemplary human beings. It really was not. So, like I say, when I was growing up, not a whole lot of pride in being a nerd. But I had nerd shame. I remember a lot of that. And this is, you got to remember, like I say, 70s and 80s. You know, I graduated high school in 1988. So those were my nerd years. Well, they've all been my nerd years. But when I was growing up, I don't remember being seriously picked on or even made fun of for being a nerd. I mean, not directly at least. But if anything, I know I was stereotyped as a nerd, as a brain. I was always, in every class I was in, I was always the smartest kid in the room. And that's how I was defined by my classmates for many, many years. And that's how I defined myself. I mean, it didn't bother me, at least not for a while. But then I got to junior high and I got to high school, and then I really started to feel that heavy nerd shame. It was the idea that once I got there, I had this idea in my head that, you know, maybe someday I'd like to date girls, maybe, but I didn't know how to get them to talk to me, and I felt that it was my whole nerd being that was keeping me from being a social creature. The fact that my parents were military and that we moved every year and a half to 2 years, that didn't occur to me to factor into it, but I just so wanted to be normal. I'm putting that in quotes. I guess you can't see my fingers. and And so when I was in high school, early high school, I think I was a freshman, I did the most horrible thing because of my nerd shame. My best friend at the time, his name was Arpy. And, Arpy, I said it. All right. And Arpy and I were great friends, and we shared all the same interests, the role-playing games, the comic books, listening to Weird Al Yankovic. And he was a great friend, and we hung out for a couple years, almost. And then I decided that being a nerd was holding me back. And Arpy was just a classic nerd at the time, as was I. But I thought, wow, Arpy is just dragging me down. I'm never going to get over this whole nerd thing as long as I'm hanging out with him. How is anyone going to realize how cool I am if I've got Arpy as this albatross around my neck all the time? I honestly thought that. And so, in my wisdom, I cut Arpy off completely. No explanation, no anything. I mean, he was my best friend, all right? It's not, you know, for how long we spent, you know, I'd spend the night at his house, he'd spend the night at my house, you know, at least 2-3 weekends a month, we were hanging out together, doing whatever, and then I just cut him off. I just stopped calling him, I stopped taking his calls. It was, oh yeah, nope, I'm sorry, I'm busy, yeah, no, I'm not interested, sorry. I cannot imagine how much I hurt him. I mean, criminy, you know, I thought it was bad for me, being a nerd, wanting something better, thinking that maybe I could change my image and somehow that would improve, you know, by pretending I was something else. That would make my life better. You know, imagine being Arpy, and this poor guy, you know, he only has a few friends in the world, like me, and now suddenly his best friend, no explanation, just stops calling him. God, I am still absolutely ashamed of that. It was the most terrible thing I've ever done to another person. And of course, it didn't work. I tried to make new friends, but all the new friends I tried to make were just other nerds, and none of them liked me as well as Arpy did. So I didn't have any close friends for a while, and I certainly didn't get to date any girls as a result of that move. I completely failed on that front. In recent years, I know where Arpy lives now. I've tried to look him up. I've tried to make contact with him. I've tried to apologize for what I did, and as I rightly deserve, he has not returned any of my calls. So, and I don't blame him at all. But I didn't learn a lesson from that. Remember, we're still talking about my nerd shame. Like I say, Dad was military. We moved on to another school, and at the new place, I wound up. This was in Bellevue, Nebraska, and when I got to the new high school, I thought, God, this is my chance. Nobody here knows me. I can start off fresh. I can have a whole new image. I can be someone completely new. And so I found, immediately spotted, the biggest socially awkward, inept nerd in school. I can't even remember his name. And he wasn't, you know, I never befriended him. I was never hung out with him. But I saw him, and I saw a lot of similarities between myself and him, just in mannerisms, the way he walked, the way he always had his head down, the way, just little things, and decided that, all right, you know what, here is how I'm going to change this image. I am going to do everything I can to not be like him, and again, didn't help me, didn't do much for me at all, but like I say, the nerd shame was still pretty heavy. But, you know what, by the end of college, or the end of high school, I had already hooked up with my old friend Steve from back in my grade school, junior high days. And Steve's a great guy. We got back to playing role-playing games, me and Steve, my brother Kyle, Kyle was truly my best friend through all of this. I mean, with all the moving, everything going on, Kyle was the one who was just always there for me. No matter where we went, I always had my brother. And that friendship has hung on. So, you know, to you, Kyle. but you know, we got back to our gaming. We got back to our comic books, to just being us, and that was a little better. Still didn't get many dates, but you know what? That's not everything to life. And then even in college, we moved on to college, and I wound up with a great group of guys, and we all hung out in our apartment. We hung out every weekend. We played Dungeons and Dragons or other role playing games, and we also did some partying and occasional studying and other stuff. I mean, that wasn't our whole lives, but we did do a lot of gaming. And one of the things that we had in our apartment was we had done, for playing Dungeons and Dragons, we had created a map. I had created the map, because again, I'm the Dungeon Master. And so I'd created this map of the world that we were playing in. And it started off as just a few pieces of graph paper with just the area that they were in. Again, I'm gesturing, you can't see that. And as they would travel to new parts of the world, well, I'd draw up new maps that fit that, and then we'd put those up and put all the map pieces together. And finally we decided that, well, we had so many of these pieces of map that all went together like a giant jigsaw puzzle that, you know what, the simplest thing to do is just put them up on the wall of our apartment. So for a good year in this apartment in college, it was three of us living there, and then, you know, four other guys that came over constantly. I mean, we all pretty much hung out there nonstop. And in the main room of the apartment, the very front living room, right there by the front door, we had what eventually grew to cover the entire wall of this apartment, this huge Dungeons and Dragons map. I mean, it was literally floor to ceiling, you know, a good 8 or 9 feet wide. The thing was massive. And then back to the shame. One night, we had ordered pizza, and the pizza guy, and we ordered pizza a lot, pizza guy comes into the apartment while we're digging up money and figuring out how we're going to pay for this. And as he's standing there, pizza guy turns and sees the giant map on the wall. Now, we didn't have our dice out or our gaming books or any other stuff. All he sees is this map. And pizza guy gets this knowing look on his face, and he turns to us and he goes, "So, what's that?" And honest to God, we couldn't even own it. We couldn't own it. We went, "Oh, well, yeah, no, it's a geography project. It's for school." And pizza guy was not fooled. Pizza guy immediately turns back to us and says, "Oh, yeah? If I didn't know any better, I'd swear you guys were a bunch of gamers." Now, at this point, pizza guy has just tipped us off that he's in the know. I mean, he recognizes what's going on here. He recognizes, you know, he knows enough to know that this is role-playing games. He's in the club. I mean, we should have taken that as the tip-off. That, well, he's one of us. That's why he knows. But no, we were so embarrassed by it that we had to insist to him, no, absolutely not. Of course it's not. What are you doing here? Take your money and get out. And off he went. So that's my experience with nerd shame. But then, you know, it was during that time, by the way, while I had the giant map on my wall, that was when I met my wife. Not in front of the map, but we met at that time. And, you know, I didn't make any secret of being a nerd. Yeah, it wasn't like something that I went and bragged to people about on the first date or anything. But it wasn't a secret. And apparently, while my wife was not at the time a nerd herself, either it didn't bother her, or she looked past it, or she thought it was cute. I have no idea what. But whatever happened, it worked, and we are still together. We have been together for 20 years now since we first started dating. So, pretty darn cool in my opinion. After that, I just kind of loosened up. Once I got out of college, once I started my own life, it just seemed easier just to own who I am. Like I say, my brother and I, you know, started an amateur game company and website so that we could write our own role-playing games. You know, we weren't hiding this from anybody. We were putting it right out there. Although, I suppose, I still, when I first published my first game, Pariah, I did have someone at work, because I was bragging about it at work. I was like, "Yeah, look, someone wants to publish my game. Holy cow!" And I had one gal at work, still work with her, by the way, one gal at work who heard me describing what my game is, and she honestly looked at me and said, "Oh, it's not that Dungeons and Dragons, is it?" And you could see in her eyes that quite clearly, she was hoping it wasn't that Dungeons and Dragons, because that, of course, would mean that I worship the devil. And she obviously was still, had heard that somewhere, was still locked onto that misconception. And I had to explain to her that, well, no, it's not Dungeons and Dragons, but it is amazingly similar. It is a role-playing game, and I explained to her what the whole thing was about. And then I did finish it off with saying, you know, yeah, it's not D&D, but we do still worship Satan, so that's the important part of the game. And then she got the humor of it, and she laughed, and I don't know if my explanation made any sense to her or not. I don't know if it changed her opinion in any way. But again, God, at least I was owning it, finally. Now, like I say, I'm 20 years past the pizza guy incident in college, and now I've got kids of my own. A couple of them are teenagers, and I watch my kids, and the shame is just not there. It is amazing. For several years, I've been saying this, that they have no shame about being nerds at all. I mean, they're into the exact same things I am, and even some more. You know, my kids, they're both in the school play right now. My one son just went to state speech. I couldn't be more proud. Second year in a row. I mean, that's spectacular. You know, their marching band wins at competitions. They, you know, and they're proud of that. They love that. It's what they're good at. It's what they do. And they have a great circle of friends. And it doesn't stop them. The shame is not there. They're proud of what they're doing. And it works for them. They have the confidence and the I don't know. They have confidence in who they are. I mean, as much as teenagers can, you know, but certainly more than I ever did at that age. And I'm just in awe. I'm jealous of my kids. I'm jealous that I couldn't have that opportunity when I was their age. I wish I could have been that comfortable in my own skin when I was them. And of course, you know, this isn't to say that you know, their life is all wine and roses, or Mountain Dew and roses, whatever it is teenagers have. I mean, clearly they've got their own insecurities, they've got their own problems, but, you know, they're happy, and they have good friends, and they enjoy what they do, and that is why I named this podcast and my website Nerd Pride, is because of that. It's something that I wish I had had when I was younger. I'm glad I have now. I'm glad my kids have. I hope that my wife and I are the reason for that, that we instilled this confidence in them. But you know what? If it wasn't us, if it was just random luck, hey, I'm happy with that too. I don't care. My kids are happy and they're good people. That's all I ever wanted for them. So, excuse me. So, does this mean that we're seeing the dawning of a new era? I mean, that's what I'm wondering myself. It feels like it is, right? I mean, is nerd oppression over? You know, we see nerd heroes everywhere nowadays. Is this our new paradigm? And I guess the answer for me, not really. I mean, my kids are lucky. They attend a school that supports the arts. They attend a school that does serve their interests and does it well. They have great teachers, and they have decent programs, and I've been very happy with the education that my kids are getting from their public school. But I also recognize that not all places are like that. Not all schools are like that. And while I don't think that my kids are getting picked on for being nerds or anything like that, you know, there's still a difference, you know. Even in a school like ours, where they have a very large band, and boy, one of the most amazing things, because I had never seen this growing up, we go to football games now, and we watch football, and then at halftime, the band comes out to play, and in the band are football players. The football players come off the field, they go grab their instruments, and they go march in the marching band. They're still in their football uniforms, cheerleaders, still in their cheerleading uniforms, go grab their instruments, and they march in the band because they're in band. And I'm not saying that they all mix all the time and everyone's a huge happy family, but there's a lot of crossover and a lot of support, and it's heartwarming because, my God, when I was a kid, you would never see the football players grabbing an instrument. You would never know. They didn't mix. You didn't do it that way. So, my kids, I'm glad they're in the school they're in. It works really well for them. But not all schools are like that. I mean, we've got friends in neighboring schools where, a town similar to the size of ours, where, we've got, 300 some kids in the school. They've got a similar size school. They've got 7 members in band. 7. How do you do that? I mean, we went to go watch a play at this neighboring town, and they had a grand total of, I think, 15 cast members for their one-act play. I mean, 15 cast members and crew members, the director, all together, 15 people involved in their play. I'm like, my God, our school, same size school, our school had that many fairies. I mean, not just cast, but we had that many fairies. We were doing Midsummer Night's Dream. See how I take credit for that? That's right. That's right. I was in charge. Well, I watched my kids do it. But we did Midsummer Night's Dream, and we had more fairies than they had entire cast members. So while maybe I'm living a little nerd paradise here, not everywhere's like that. And adult nerds like me, my brother, my friends, we're an awesome demographic, all right? The people know to target us as a demographic because we've got some disposable income, and movies and TV and whatnot can cater to us because they know that we will spend money on any property based on a comic book. Oh, heck yeah, it's just a cash cow for them. You can put nerd heroes in things, and we'll buy that, all right? And a lot of people will. But just because we've got a segment of the mass media willing to cater to us doesn't mean that there's a nerd revolution. I mean, there is to a degree. Nerds of my era have all grown up, and technology has become far more important in our lives. People with technical skills have become more important in that sense. And so, people, we're more front and center. You see more value in it. But, the revolution is far from complete. Look at the nerd heroes that they give us. Half of them are really just there to make fun of nerd stereotypes. Maybe not as bad as Revenge of the Nerds, but it's still there. I mean, I love Big Bang Theory, all right? If you haven't seen this TV show, go watch it. I love Big Bang Theory. It makes me laugh a lot. But 3 of the 4 main cast members are basically socially inept losers. And even Leonard, the one normal guy, personally, I think he only looks normal in comparison to the other 3. So, while I think it's a great show, and I have a fun time watching it, it's not like we're still being held up as role models to aspire to, necessarily. I mean, it's still, in a lot of senses, just comic relief. So, there's good and there's bad. It's a work in progress. But, for me, the nerd pride is out there. And I love seeing it. I love people who are, whether you're a classic nerd with the same stuff that I am, or whether you're in your own freaky independent gig, I don't care. As long as you own it and you're proud of it, be who you are and enjoy that. I feel so preachy. This is not what this podcast is going to be about all the time. Mostly, this podcast is going to be about me talking about whatever happens to interest me at any given moment. So, from now on, I'll be talking about movies, I'll be talking about television, I'll be talking about random geeky math things, I'll be talking about what music I'm enjoying, I'll be talking about, who cares? If I'm interested in it, it's going to be something nerdy, and that's what I'm going to talk about. But today, I had to talk about the nerd pride. I guess I'm done with that. But that ending note, that be yourself, be proud of who you are, And it feeds right into this week's music. So, I'm going to start this. Don't judge. Just listen.
So if you're too school for cool, and you treat it like a fool, you can choose to let it go. We can always party on our own. So raise your glass if you are wrong. In all the right ways, all my underdogs. We will never be anything but loud and nitty gritty, dirty little freaks. So raise your glass if you are wrong. In all the right ways, all my underdogs. We will never be anything but loud and nitty gritty, dirty little freaks.
See, I debated about whether or not to use that song. It speaks to individuality and being yourself, being unabashedly proud of who you are. Right, exactly what I was just talking about, not moments ago. And yet, here I was, nervous about including that song because, well, I'm worried it's too mainstream or too poppy or whatever. I mean, don't I want some quirky, off-the-wall bit that you've never heard of just to impress you with how clever and eclectic I am? Well, yeah, I do want that. And I've got plenty of songs for that, and they'll come up in later weeks. But for right now, I like Pink. I like this song. I mean, I've been working for 2 weeks to put this podcast together, and I absolutely cannot get that song out of my head. It just fits with what I'm doing. And finally, I realized that, you know what? I'm just using it. This is what I'm talking about. Is, you know what? Refuse to be ashamed of liking what you like. And if this song has been speaking to me, then darn it, I need to put it out here. A while ago, I heard someone lump Pink in with Kesha and Avril, Britney, all those others who seem to be racing to the bottom, racing to be the lowest common denominator in music, all right? Talking about partying, drinking, sleeping with random guys, whatever it is that they do in their songs. And this person put Pink in with that group, and at the time I was kind of offended. I mean, Sure, Pink can be raunchy and freaky, and some of her songs do talk about partying, but in general, I respect her music. I respect her message. I like Pink. So, that was Pink with Raise Your Glass. I recommend it. Good song. But enough of my soapbox. It's time for the Pod-O-Matic. Wait, what was that noise? That's right. That is actually the Pop-O-Matic dice portion of a Trouble game that I am now using in order to come up with some random podcast elements here at the end of the cast. So this particular Trouble game was actually the Star Wars edition. So it not only has dice in there, but also a little miniature R2-D2. So having popped it, I come up with a 5. And R2-D2 laying on his back. So, consulting my chart, that means my first Pod-O-Matic topic is Pluto is not a planet. Yeah, you know what? I know it's been years since Pluto got demoted, but personally, I am still really upset about this. The reason they made this decision is because of Sedna. Do you know what Sedna is? All right, Sedna is yet another planet that they found outside the orbit of Pluto. And Sedna possibly even bigger than Pluto, from what they could tell. And so they said, well, is Sedna a planet? And they said, well, you know, if we're going to count Sedna as a planet, then, well, you know what, we have to count Charon as a planet. Yes, you do know Charon? No. Or not Charon. Charon is Pluto's moon. Ceres. Because Ceres is the largest object in our asteroid belt. All right, and Ceres happens to be big enough to be a small moon. And it's round, and it's pretty, and it circles around the sun like any other planet. It just happens to be in the middle of the asteroid belt. And so here they said, gosh, if we allow in Sedna, then that puts us up to 10 planets, and well, then we'll have to let in Ceres, because it would qualify as well. We're up to 11. Technically, this is where Charon comes in. Technically, Charon, well, Charon, I think is how you pronounce it, but I always say Charon. As Pluto's moon, technically, Pluto and Charon, Charon doesn't orbit Pluto. The two of them orbit each other. They're like a dual planet system. Charon happens to be smaller, but they still orbit around each other. I mean, does that make Charon a planet? And what about all these others? Because they've got a bunch of rocks out there. All right, big ones, that big enough to be round like planets, or small moons, or whatever you want to call them. And they all go around the sun, just like Pluto does in its eccentric little orbit, just like Sedna, just like Ceres. And so it occurred to them that if they let Sedna be a planet, then ultimately we're going to find out that our solar system has 40 planets, 50, 200. We had no idea. But yeah, the number may be as high as 50, 60, 100 planets. And suddenly that was somehow unacceptable? Really? So they said, well, okay, how about if we just limit it to 9 planets? And they came up with definitions, and they actually had the conversation that, you know what, we'll come up with a definition, and even though this definition cuts Pluto out, we'll, I don't know, let Pluto be grandfathered in. All right, Pluto gets to stick around because, well, it's always been a planet, so we'll just keep Pluto as a planet. But all the rest of you, even though you're just as qualified, if not more so, than Pluto, we're going to cut you out. And then they said, no, we can't do that. We're scientists. We need internal consistency. So Pluto had to go. They figured they would much rather have 8 planets than 50. Personally, I think they're all idiots. Because, honest to God, what's more exciting? If you're trying to get kids, if you're trying to get people excited about space and astronomy and exploration, what's more exciting? 8 planets or 100 planets? I mean, holy crap, think of what's out there. I mean, it's not just, you know, I've mentioned Pluto and Charon and Ceres and Sedna, but there's Orcus. Orcus! They have a planet out there, I still call it a planet, they have a planet out there named after a demon prince from the first Dungeon Master's Manual. Is that not awesome? Not Dungeon Master, the Monster Manual from the first D&D edition. It's Orcus. There's one called K-O-R, which is not the initials K-O-R, but actually spelled out, it begins with a Q. There's K-O-R. There's dozens of these things. And they're all cool. When it comes to space, when it comes to astronomy, astrophysics, I personally love our solar system. All right? Yes, stars are fascinating, and I know that there's other solar systems out there, and there's planets that go around those solar systems. There's black holes. There's millions upon millions of galaxies. There's all sorts of really cool stuff out there, but man, the thing that gets me the most is our solar system and just the amazing stuff that is right here, because this is all stuff we can get to. I mean, we can reach it. We've sent ships to most of this stuff. We've seen up close Saturn and its moons, Jupiter and its moons. We've passed by Neptune and Uranus, and these are things that we can get to that realistically, you know, 300 years from now, we'll have ships and colonies and stuff out there mining these for resources, with people living on them for all we know. I love our solar system. Other systems, other stars, will we get there someday? I don't know, maybe not. But Jupiter, oh, we'll get there. I mean, we've already sent our probes out there. It's only a matter of time. And so, for me, it is just a travesty. That they cut Pluto out of the ranks of planets. And the worst slap in the face, the worst insult, Pluto, you are no longer a planet. Sedna, you're not even in consideration for being a planet anymore. Ceres, you're out. We're going to reclassify you, and you know what we're going to call you? Dwarf planets. What? Dwarf, but that still has planet in the name. It's still a planet. How? Oh, I'm so insulted by that. That is horrifying. So they come up with their definition. And essentially, if you want to be a planet, you have to orbit around the sun. Okay, check, we got that. You have to be large enough that your gravity forces you into a round shape. So you got to be round. And there's actually some stuff about this that, you know, technically a lot of us are just elliptical instead of round, but, you know, the definition accommodates that. And there are other things that, you know, based on density, based on composition, there can be some gray areas. That doesn't matter. But in general, you go around the sun and you're round, you should be a planet. That's my personal call on the matter. But these scientists who apparently think they know more than me about Pluto went and added the extra definition that you have to be able to clear out your area of space. Your gravity, your size has to be sufficient for you to have cleared out your orbit around the sun. So there's not a lot of other junk floating around, or the junk that is floating around is just following you, or is dominated by your gravity. Because we got plenty of junk that shares orbit with Earth. Okay, we've got... Oh, I'm sorry, I'm going off on a side note. We have got a great little chunk of rock called Kruthni. And Kruthni orbits around the sun in the same orbit that Earth does, but it orbits it in a horseshoe shape. Essentially, it goes all the way around the sun until it meets the Earth, and then our gravity forces it to turn around, and it goes back the other way. It travels back around the sun the other way until it meets us around again on the other side. And then, now it's going to turn around and go the other. I love Kruthni. It is. I love all these little things. They're cool. But, again, everything in Earth's orbit, for the most part, is dominated by the Earth. It all responds to our gravity, whether it's the moon going around the Earth, whether it's Kruthni bouncing off of us over and over again. We dominate our area. Jupiter clearly dominates its area in space. Pluto, Sedna, Ceres, not so much. But to me, I mean, if you're going to call them dwarf planets, then why not just allow them to be planets, and then you can make your categorization that way, all right? I mean, seriously, right now, we got three types of planets. We've got terrestrial planets, which are the little rocky ones like Earth and Venus and Mars and Mercury. Don't leave out Mercury. So we've got the four terrestrial planets that are small, rocky, but able to clear out their orbit. Then we've got the four gas giants. So terrestrial planets, gas giant planets. And then dwarf planets. God, why? You know what? I'm just frustrated. I'm going to go over and over and over this, and I'm never going to get to anything new on it because it just drives me crazy. I keep coming back to dwarf planet. It's a... All right. But enough. The Podomatic calls me. So let's go ahead and hit this sucker again. Okay. I come up with a 2, and R2-D2 is lying on his face. All right. Take a look at the chart, and movie review. Sweet. And it doesn't say what movie, but I was hoping this one would come up because I know the movie that I want to review, and I'm not going to take too long with it. But I got to see True Grit a few weeks ago, and I have never seen the original True Grit. I am not a huge John Wayne fan. It was before my era, and I just never really did pick up on John Wayne. I mean, I've seen a couple of his movies, but True Grit was never one of them. So, I'm not familiar with the original movie. I've never read the book. I don't know much about True Grit at all, except I knew it was about an aging cowboy. That's all I got. I watched this movie with my wife and my in-laws, because it was my father-in-law's birthday. And so we all went out together to see True Grit. My father-in-law is a huge John Wayne fan. He's seen True Grit, a million times. And we thought he would enjoy this. We were hoping he would enjoy this, because there's also every possibility that, you know, it's, you know, not as good as the original was, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, there's every possibility. But, as it turns out, we all had a great time. We really enjoyed this movie. Man, the Coen brothers knew exactly what they were doing. It was great. What made it great? I'm not gonna get into a bunch of spoilers. I'm not gonna go into a whole lot of detail. I just want to say that the three lead characters in this movie, all right, Jeff Bridges, Haley Steinfeld, Matt Damon, were phenomenal. And even the supporting characters, all right, Josh Brolin, Barry Pepper. I didn't even recognize him with those freaky teeth in, and I I know Barry Pepper from a couple of their movies. He's one of those smaller actors that I kind of keep an eye on because I think he's great in everything he does. They're all good. But this movie, the plot, while not bad, the plot is really irrelevant to this film. For me, it was watching those three main characters and how they played off of each other, because all of them, the magic of these characters, and this is like most Coen Brother movies, they were endearing, they were charming, they were talented, each of them in their own way had their very strong suits, and yet they also all had their very real failings. They were all broken in some way, and to watch those three play off of each other was just an experience. I had such a great time. When it comes out on DVD, I will eventually get it from Netflix or watch it on Instant Watch if it comes up that way. And I will definitely watch this movie again because it just there's so much in there that I know I missed. And I want to say Haley Steinfeld as Maddie in this movie. I think it is a shame that she got the Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actress. There was no supporting about this. She was the lead. She was this movie. I mean, granted, Jeff Bridges, brilliant. Brilliant as Rooster Cogburn. But Jeff Bridges is always brilliant. That's not the point. But Haley Steinfeld was the lead. I mean, as much as Jeff Bridges and certainly more than Matt Damon. And I'm sorry she didn't get full credit for being the lead in this movie. Because, and this is going to take me back to everything ties back to gaming references for me, I'm sorry. But Haley Steinfeld, Maddie, in the movie. When they first start suiting up to start their expedition across Indian territory, Haley comes out all suited up and ready to go. I mean, she's got her traveling gear on. And after everything you've seen of her so far in the movie, and she's this, yeah, in so many ways really smart, but also in so many ways really naive. And she's just suited up and ready to go. I mean, her travel gear's on. She's got her horse. She's, you know, made all of her arrangements. She's ready to head out. As I watched her, and you'd have to watch the movie to know what I'm talking about. But as I watched her, when you see it, think about this. All I could think was, God, I wish I had an Old West role-playing game in front of me right now so that I could play this character. So, because the character is so interesting. So competent, so strong, so tough in so many areas, and yet also so clearly out of her element and broken, and it just really, really cool. So, okay, but enough of me fawning over the movie. That is my entire review of True Grit. I highly recommend that everybody go see it. It is worth your time. And granted, I am reviewing a movie that that we saw, I don't know, 3 months ago now. But you guys are going to have to get used to that, because I don't catch anything when it's current, all right? Movies, very rarely do we actually see a movie in the theater, and even if I do, I probably won't think to mention it on the podcast right away. Most of my movies I'm watching on Instant Watch, on Netflix, or I'm getting the discs from Netflix. TV shows, I for the life of me, cannot keep up with TV shows anymore. I try. There's so many things that I love. But I just don't have time for them. So TV shows, we wind up getting on DVD or we get them on Instant Watch again. So I'm always a season behind on everything. Comic books, I've already told you. I stopped collecting ages ago. And I love comic books. And I can make all sorts of comic book references. I can talk about them for hours. But all of my knowledge is really out of date. Even my role-playing games. I'm telling you, role-playing games are my thing. You know, when I have to define my nerdity, role-playing games is the first thing I think of. That's my go-to nerd quality. And even with role-playing games, everything I play is either really old or something that I designed myself. I'm aware of the new stuff that comes out. I listen to some podcasts. I follow some gaming news online. So I can speak about it a little bit, but I don't know it. I mean, Dungeons & Dragons, I haven't even picked up 4th edition. I'm still playing... Well, technically 3.5, but we're playing Pathfinder from, I'm drawing a blank, from Paizo Publishing. And if you haven't heard me talk about it before, ooh, Paizo is awesome. I love Pathfinder. Pathfinder is the D&D for me right now. But again, you know, this is all stuff that, yes, Pathfinder is current. Pathfinder is producing new material. But the game itself is based on D&D 3.5, which, you know, D&D 3 came out how many years ago? So I don't play any of the new stuff. I don't watch anything new. I don't, you know, a lot of my movie references are going to be nerd movies from the 1980s. So, you know, just get used to that. I have lots of nostalgia references. So True Grit being only 3 months old and you're getting a movie review of it right now? Whew, man, that's current for me. We are in luck this week. All right, let's see. How far in am I? We're in about an hour. I got time for one more Podomatic, I think. We'll try one more. Hang on. Let's get this going. All right. So I've got a 4 and... Oh, R2-D2 is on his back again. So I stopped calling gay is our topic. I see I'm resisting the urge to re-roll because this one's not a real chipper topic to start with. But if this is what R2 tells me I'm doing, this is what we're doing. So we're sticking with the format. So I've stopped calling gay, and I actually stopped calling gay a couple years ago, but the topic is always still relevant. My bit is even before the don't call people gay public service announcements. I don't remember what they called that, but Wanda Sykes did the commercials, and again, like R2, if Wanda Sykes tells me what to do, I'm going to do it. But even before the Wanda Sykes ad campaigns on TV, I had already made the decision to try not to use the word gay anymore as an insult, to try not to use the word fag, certainly, because that one's even more insulting. but just because, you know, implying that someone is gay and using it as an insult, it's hurtful, it's hateful. There's no reason to be using that. And I'm not perfect. Sometimes I slip. But we're trying to stop. And even then, so knowing that I was trying to stop that, we were looking for substitute words. And so for a while, you know, can you refer to someone as effeminate instead of gay? And even that really bugged me. Because, I mean, at first it seemed all right, but then I got to thinking, no, so saying that you're like a girl, that's an insult? You know, we used to make a lot of jokes about, so what are you, a girl? Come on, let's go. And even that, no, to imply that being a girl is somehow wrong or weak or not as good as being a guy? Again, insulting and sexist. So I need a better substitute word. And when it comes to substitute words, this is where the happy part comes in. For example, many, many, many years ago, I gave up on the word retarded as much as possible. And because retarded is a great insult. It's a great word to throw out there. It's really easy. It resonates with people. But, you know, like I say, I worked with mentally handicapped adults for a long time. And even if I hadn't, it's really offensive to say retarded. And so, the substitute word that we came up with at the time was Australian, which is offensive to Australians, but we don't care. That's the best part. It's not racist. It's not sexist. It's not homophobic. It's anti-Australian. I suppose it's nationist? How do you refer to that? I don't care. But it's Australian. And so the best part is I started using Australian. I started using it in online discussions at first and made a big deal about it. And then I started using it in real life. And even when people don't know where the reference comes from or why I'm using the word Australian, it's very clear from context exactly what it means. That if something is just that stupid, oh God, that's Australian. And my kids picked it up. And so my kids will still use that. I still use that. I have no idea if it's spread beyond them to any of their friends. God, I hope so. I would love to see that enter the vernacular. And then 10 years from now, we'd have Wanda Sykes come out and tell us how we really need to stop using Australian because, you know, we need to think about what we're saying. But for right now, Australian is a great substitute word. And speaking of substitute words, an Australian friend of mine, who is, in fact, actually from Australia, not that he's stupid in any way. For a while, he decided that he was swearing too much. And so he decided that he was going to make his best effort to replace every swear word he ever used with the word monkey. And if you don't see that as funny, try it. See what happens. Replace all of your swear words in every conversation with monkey or some form of the word monkey. And trust me, you will laugh. You will laugh your monkey off because that is funny stuff. It's hard to do because there's lots of places where monkey works really well. All right? Laugh your monkey off. Oh, what, the monkey? See, that's great. Go monkey yourself. See, there's all sorts of ways to use monkey. But there are other places where it doesn't fit quite as well as you'd want. So it feels awkward because most of your best swear words are only one syllable. Monkey is two, and it throws your rhythm off a little bit. So if anyone's got any options for a better all-around swear replacement than monkey, go ahead and come to the forums and suggest them, because I am open to any of that. And as I've stated many times before, not frack. I hate frack. What an awful, terrible substitute. It's just, I mean, clearly, look, it's trying to be the F word, but it's just too cute for its own good. I can't deal with that one. So, since I'm not calling gay, I need a substitute word for gay. All right? That means that same kind of stupid. All right? Because that's when you're using it as an insult. You're talking about stupid and a little inadequate, a little, you know, however you want to phrase it, but not quite Australian, but something different. And my kids suggested, and I love this, that we replace the word with Bieber. I'm not up on my pop culture. I don't know where Bieber comes from. But I think Bieber, as a substitute for the word gay, is hysterical. So, I just saw someone use it on the forum today, and it made me laugh really hard. So that's going to be my effort, is to try and replace it with Bieber at every opportunity. We'll see how it works. It may come off, and may not. Because while every guy I know can't stand Justin Bieber, girls seem to dig him for some reason. Or at least some girls do. So maybe Bieber won't have that same universal appeal I'm looking for. So. But that's what I'm going with for now. If you've got a better idea, let me know. All right, have I gone on long enough? Yeah, whether you think so or not, we're wrapping it up now. I hope that this hasn't been too painful for you to listen to. Like I always tell people, if you ever saw the first 2 weeks of Jon Stewart on The Daily Show, they were some of the most awkward, torturous episodes ever. I mean, you know, and I don't know how familiar any of you are with the early days of The Daily Show, but originally it was Craig Kilborn was the host. And I loved The Daily Show, and I loved Craig Kilborn. I thought it was a great show. Great show. And then Jon Stewart came on, and I knew a little bit about Jon Stewart. But, God, could he step in for Craig Kilborn? Really? These are big shoes to fill, so it seemed. And Jon Stewart came in, and again, his first 2 weeks were terrible. I mean, he was just awkward, and you could just tell he was kind of reaching. He was trying too hard. It just wasn't up to the same level. And then, of course, he finally got comfortable in his own skin. He got comfortable in his studio. His writers got better at writing for him. And Jon Stewart is like a nerd god nowadays. He defines that show. I mean, seriously, Craig who? No one even cares anymore because the show has become something completely other than what it was, and it's phenomenal. But I remember, because I watched every single day, because I had always watched Kilborn's show, and I watched religiously in the early days of Jon Stewart. I still watch The Daily Show occasionally, not as regularly. Again, short on time. But back then, I watched every day, and I am fortunate enough to have seen the early Jon Stewart. I saw what he went through. I saw how rough it was on him, and yet now, you know, he's everybody's idol. Everybody loves Jon Stewart. So that wraps up our first episode of Nerd Pride Radio. If you want to email me, send your comments to podcast@nerdprideradio.com, or even better, come join our forums at nerdprideradio.com. Otherwise, tune in next week. Same nerd time, same nerd channel. More than a little lazy. I'm very short of attention. Got a short little span of attention. And oh, my nights are so long. Where's my wife and family? What if I die here? Who'll be my role model now that my role model is gone? Duck back down the alley with some roly-poly little black-faced girl. See, I don't even know what that line is. All right. Totally got to cut that part out.